Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, yesterday you talked about the president actually going back in time to make one of his promises expire at that town hall slash campaign rally in Maryland. With the martinis today, we're going to go in back in time between the first and the second, because the good news is clearly not the president's speech. It is, in fact, House Speaker John Boehner's five-minute response, which I thought was short and sweet. And then we'll get to the Obama atrocities in his speech to the nation, which obviously came before that. One of the big things the president kept addressing and kept stating, and as he has it for weeks now, is this term balanced approach, as if suddenly the magical fairy dust is going to bring everybody together in a kumbaya moment. And John Boehner quickly put cold water on that little idea.
The president has often said we need a balanced approach, which in Washington means we spend more and you pay more.
And Boehner also gave the American people a little more insight into what's really been going on in these debt negotiations.
And the sad truth is that the president wanted a blank check 6 months ago, and he wants a blank check today. This is just not going to happen. You see, there's no stalemate here in Congress. The House passed a bill to raise the debt limit with bipartisan support.
Went on to say that they're going to do it again as a result of the bill that he put forth yesterday, which I know a lot of conservatives will be debating. I don't think a lot of them are crazy about it, but it's probably palatable. Anyway, Jim, in terms of his response to the president, I think he did very well. As I said, he kept it short and sweet. It helped that it wasn't quite a response to the State of the Union and all that grandeur. But he was just very plain spoken, talked about jobs, actually, which was a little bit different than the president, and how tax increases would impact that. I don't know how much it moved the needle, but Boehner did a pretty good job at that.
First of all, I mean, taking less time to speak than Obama is not the highest bar to clear. but having said that, I think 5 minutes was really all he needed. You think about since Boehner debuted on the national stage, it's kind of been this disregard of him as a public speaker. There's been a lot of mockery of him, breaking into tears way too often, et cetera, et cetera. But I think this actually, he just came out and he said directly what he needed to say. And I think the line that I liked best was, look, if you are spending too much and cannot afford what you are spending, you have to spend less. There's no two other ways about it. It was nothing Obama said was that direct, that simple. He didn't look like a man who thought this debate was going badly for him. So I don't know if that is exceptionally good acting, or at least as I begin to suspect in the last couple of days, and then I think, you know, you'd probably concur, is that For a debate that's supposedly going as disastrously for the Republicans, they're not acting like it's going disastrously. And Democrats allegedly winning this one aren't acting like they're winning. And if Obama thinks that everybody he's winning this debate, why did he feel a need for a national address in addition to the four or five press conferences he had? As Mark Hemingway put it, I think we may be hitting the press conference ceiling now.
There's probably a issue that a lot of people even talked about on MSNBC last night, and that's that after all these press conferences, he had absolutely nothing new to say other than to basically put together a best of his demagogic press conferences. So.
Certainly nothing to resemble an actual plan on paper that you could look at that the CBO could score or anything like that. It basically was, no, I don't want to do nearly as much cuts as you guys are saying, and I want tax hikes. And we can get, you know, that perhaps this is a natural segue to the bad martini, which you and I can spend a lot of time on today's bad martini.
Yeah, exactly right. And just to lead into that, this isn't even one of the ones we're really going to spend a lot of time talking about, where he says, I'm not going to bore you with all the details of all these plans that have come forward. That's because you've never had one, sir. And there's only been one until like the last 24 or 48 hours when Boehner came up with a second one and Harry Reid came up with his. So thanks for not boring us with the non-existent details of your plan. But here's Jim's nominee for worst martini from the president's speech last night.
Most Americans, regardless of political party, don't understand how we can ask a senior citizen to pay more for her Medicare before we ask a corporate jet owner or the oil companies to give up tax breaks that other companies don't get? How can we ask a student to pay more for college before we ask hedge fund managers to stop paying taxes at a lower rate than their secretaries?
Then he went into talking about how rich people really want to pay taxes and they didn't ask for their tax breaks. Jim, take it away.
Corporate jets and oil companies and hedge funds, oh my! Corporate jets and oil companies and hedge funds, oh my! One of the things that was kind of interesting is, you know, a little bit before 9 o'clock, I got online and was writing parts of the Morning Jolt and looking, you know, not quite looking forward to Obama's speech. It was kind of fascinating how much of the speech was accurately predicted by anybody who's been watching Obama lately. And, you know, a lot of people said, look, this is like you took his comments from his past press conferences, put them into a blender and just put them back together. A lot of people said this was reheated leftovers from previous speeches. The fact that there's so much of it was sheer class warfare demagoguery. I mean, to hear Obama tell it, the $14.3 trillion debt basically comes down to tax rates on corporate jets. That's what it is. And if we just fix that, the $14.3 trillion goes away. It is infuriating. It is ridiculous. He's convinced that it's working for him. On the other hand, the fact that the numbers for this don't indicate this being an enormous victory for him, and the fact his poll numbers haven't really moved significantly in his direction, suggests that maybe this isn't the great solution. I think in the end, this actually comes to the problem for us, Greg, is that this is what he really believes. I don't think this is when you hear him saying about balanced approach, that in that I hear Axelrod and the communications team spending days and weeks and months with focus groups saying, all right, how about this euphemism for tax increases? Oh, no, they still hate that one. How about tax revenue enhancers? Oh, no, they hate that one too. Until finally they come up with balanced approach, and that's the most generic, non-descriptive, euphemistic term they can possibly come up with. That I understand the selling with. With this stuff, though, I think it's that Obama really does believe that the only thing that really needs to be done to get America on sounder financial footing is raise taxes. Because in terms of spending cuts, as he said, he doesn't want to go into the details. And not only that, like, I don't think he really likes thinking about spending cuts that much.
The fact that he even mentioned 98% of you won't be seeing a tax hike is basically like, most of you don't have anything to worry about, so we should get them, right? Right? We should get them. So, yes. I mean, that was very non-subtle there. And then, of course, he gave this mystery quote from a predecessor, and I'm sure everyone was really scratching their heads trying to figure out who in the world, one of his recent predecessors, would he be trying to use to force the point that he's putting forth a balanced approach. Shockingly, it was Ronald Reagan. And so here's what he had to say right after that.
But today, many Republicans in the House refuse to consider this kind of balanced approach, an approach that was pursued not only by President Reagan, but by the first President Bush, by President Clinton, by myself, and by many Democrats and Republicans in the United States Senate.
Mr. President, there's a lot of people still alive who knew President Reagan. They were friends of his. And you, sir, are no President Reagan in any way, shape, or form. And the fact that he's even trying to pull this off, I guess, is good in the one sense that Democrats have tried to stop demonizing Reagan because they know it doesn't do any good. But now they're trying to co-opt him. And if it's actually working, that's one of the saddest commentaries in the political spectrum. What's worth pointing out, though, of course, is that both Reagan and Bush 41 agreed to tax increases grudgingly because they were promised much more money cut in spending, both of whom were lied to, and the spending just kept going. So if those are the precedents that we're going after, Jim, I'm pretty sure that the House Republicans aren't exactly the right track.
Yeah. Yuval Levin has a great comment in the corner called Reagan's Error, in which he was, Obama is quoting Reagan when he made the deal. He's not quoting Reagan afterwards, as he put in his autobiography. Democrats reneged on their pledge, and we never got those cuts. Tax increases today for spending cuts tomorrow is never a good deal for Republicans. They never keep their word. You can never count. I mean, basically, because of the enormity of the immediate deficit crisis, the long-term debt crisis, entitlements, et cetera, the seriousness of any plan should be, what hard things is it willing to do now?
Exactly.
And a lot of these plans really aren't doing that much hard things now. So I was like, sometime down the road, then we'll do the really hard stuff. Because the right time to do the really hard stuff never really comes down the pike. You'll always find a good excuse to put it off. It's as procrastination as much as starting a diet or the new exercise routine or saving money or all these other things that we know we should do because it'll make us better people and happier. But Americans don't do it because of, basically human beings don't do because of simple human nature. With Obama, the hard decisions of these kinds of balancing the budget, entitlements, et cetera, are always going to come later. In this case, he specifically wants to address these issues in his second term, which is why it's so important to him to get the debt ceiling raised beyond November 2012. It's kind of fascinating. You can see that it's the preeminent issue in his entire calculations here.
And quickly to our third martini, I don't know if most of you are like Jim and I. I certainly like to talk back to the screen, usually in civil tones, even when the president's on. But the president asked us a question. He had a different answer to this question, but I thought I'd put it out there for us today, Jim, to have us answer this question that I think a lot of people probably did talk back to the screen on last night.
But do you know what people are fed up with most of all?
Jim?
That's just a high-hanging soft. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a lot of listeners probably yelled at the screen, you! or at the very least, presidents who just go on and talk for 15 minutes when they have no plan. Take your pick of good irritations, et cetera. Anytime the President of the United States starts emulating Andy Rooney, I think it's a good sign that this needed the screenwriters to go over this one more time with a red pencil.
Absolutely right. Yeah, there's a lot of things there. Your agenda, your out-of-control spending, your $4-plus trillion, and yes, your tired speeches with nothing new to say when even the liberals say, why was this on national television in prime time? Because it was a political speech. So I'm glad.
Greg, you know what bothers Americans most of all? Paperclips. Why are they shaped the way they are? And then they all get stuck together like that.
Oh, my goodness. At least we can laugh at it before we fall off the financial cliff here. We'll see what happens in the next few days. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.